You know that goal you set at the start of the year? You can still do it, whether you're committed to a thru hike with friends, lifting heavier, or simply walking more. It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. Because quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, simplify your progress with just 2 scoops of the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code FITNESS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com and use code FITNESS. Ka'Chava.com, code FITNESS.
Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, I'm a journalist based out in Reykjavik, Iceland, where tonight I'm recording really late at night. It's after midnight here, so the streets are quiet, it's dark and calm. And I've just finished a wonderful game called Concrete Genie, which was on PlayStation Plus. It was one of the free games that was available this month. I've had a really good time with that, so I'm going to talk about that game today as the featured game of the podcast. I've played a couple of other things this week. I've been playing a few levels of Super Mario Galaxy. I got 3D All-Stars at Christmas time, and I've been meaning to get into it, and I finally did, and I never played Galaxy before. I missed it first time around on the Wii U, and so it's really nice to get into it now. It's like a missing chapter of the Mario history for me. It's a really fun one. I like the zero gravity style and the kind of 360 degree traversal that's going on in that game. It's a really, really nice one. What else? I also played a game called Furi, F-U-R-I, which I picked up in a recent sale for just a couple of pounds. I've been really enjoying that one. It's like it's a boss battle, kind of boss rush game, where it's a little like Hyper Light Drifter. You dash, you have a sword, and you can also shoot, and you have to fight like a succession of crazy bosses, just one after the other. So it's just all of the gameplay is basically boss battles. I only got past the first one. I played it for like an hour, got past the first boss, which is kind of a tutorial type thing. But I really like the atmosphere of it, I like the art style of it, so I think I'm going to stick with it. I've gotten the second boss to her final phase. It's really challenging, really rapid, really fun, some kind of a bullet hell aspect to it, and I enjoy the Hyperlight Drifter combat style, so I've been enjoying that one too. But as well as what I've been playing, I also did a really fun article this week for the Radical Art Review, where I asked a bunch of friends to talk about their most anticipated games of 2021. And we got a really, really good selection. There were 5 different writers who contributed, and I did some myself. And I learned about some new games that I didn't know about. I learned about Sable, a really cool-looking sci-fi game. It's a little bit like, you know, when we first meet Rey in Star Wars, and she's just kind of diving into these kind of wrecks of giant old ships and salvaging technology and traveling across a desert planet, dealing with nomadic junk dealers and stuff like that. It seems like a whole game that's based on that. But it looks like it's going to be only on Xbox. And even though that means I won't be able to play it, I was kind of happy to see that, because it seems like the Series X and S buyers haven't had an awful lot to look forward to in a way. Like, there's loads of cool exclusives coming to PlayStation, like the Ratchet and Clanks and the Miles Morales and Horizon Forbidden West. So it's nice to see one coming to the Xbox too. A lot of people also mentioned Stray, that kind of slightly mysterious looking game in which you play a cat in a kind of a sci-fi world. Several people also mentioned Hollow Knight Silksong, and a whole bunch of other games. There were some things I'd never heard of, and several quite mainstream games like the new Pokemon and Monster Hunter and Horizon Forbidden West came up a bunch. But it was a really, really interesting list. I had great time editing it and putting it all together, learning what people are looking forward to this year. So if you're interested in that, it's at theradicalartreview.org, and I also linked to it on my Twitter. It was a really good read. And I am going to be editing a game section at radicalartreview.org, so expect to see like a new article about interesting developments in games and different aspects of games, hopefully about one a week. That's the loose aim. So there should be a nice little gaming section developing there soon. The next article, or one of them, is actually something I'm very excited about. It's an interview with maybe my favourite video games composer, Austin Wintory. He was responsible for Journey and Abzu and the Banner Saga, and most recently The Pathless, which was a huge soundtrack that had over 100 musicians on it, and they used sounds from all but forgotten stringed instruments and voices from the Tuvan native music tradition to make a really stunning soundtrack. And I think Austin's work is a real cut above most of what's out there. And so I managed to get in touch with Austin, and he's going to fill out some answers to questions that I've sent to him now. And so hopefully that piece will come out really nicely too. I'll be sure to mention it here when it does. But before we talk about the games, I will also very briefly mention that the show has a Patreon and is listener-supported. So if you enjoy it, if you enjoy the show today as a first-time listener, or if you're a long-time listener who would like to lend some support, you can go to patreon.com/gaminginthewild and sign up for just $1 a month or €1 a month or more if you'd like. And it helps me to keep the show running, to upgrade my equipment, get music to put into the show, get new games to write about. And there's also a really nice little Discord community where you can come and chat to me and other listeners and friends about what we're all playing. Tell us what you're excited about. Hear what we're excited about. That's patreon.com/gaminginthewild if you're interested in that. And with that out of the way, let's move on and talk about the featured game of the episode, Concrete Genie. So Concrete Genie is by a studio called Pixel Opus. It came out in 2019. It's directed by Dominic Robillard, with music by Samuel Marshall. And this studio also made Entwined. It's a game that I have downloaded from PlayStation Plus that has been coming up in my algorithm constantly. I haven't played Entwined, but I think I will after playing Concrete Genie, because I'm very impressed by it. Pixel Opus has an interesting story, actually. It's a studio founded from a Sony initiative that they launched to find small studios after the surprise success of Journey. So they were scouting around for small studios, and they partnered with the Carnegie Mellon University. I have no idea where that is. And they found that students could prototype games incredibly rapidly. And so they brought together some of the most promising students under the guidance of a couple of industry veterans, including Dominic, who directed this game, to found Pixel Opus. So that's a really interesting way for a studio to exist. It's a Sony-funded studio. And it maybe goes some way to explaining why this game feels so fresh. It really does feel full of good ideas and full of vibrancy. It doesn't lean on past games, and it has mechanics that feel like nothing I've quite seen before, actually. The game is about a teenager called Ash, that's who you play, who is living in Denska, a dark, abandoned industrial town where there is a power station, a shipyard, the traces of old industry. And it's an abandoned town. There's no one around, but there is a lot of darkness, a lot of hulking ruins, a lot of alleyways. And it's all very nicely made and very atmospheric. It reminds me a little of The Nightmare Before Christmas, if you've seen that Tim Burton classic. There's like a sort of tall stairways that kind of wind upwards and hulking silhouetted buildings against the skyline and teetering structures. Everything feels like it's crumbling, but it's all kind of dramatic and interesting and kind of romantic in its own way and kind of gothic in its own way. It's a really cool environment for the game to happen in. And Ash is living seemingly kind of, it's never fully explained, but Ash seems to be homeless or kind of just kind of living hand to mouth in this abandoned town. It's just him, and there's also a bunch of other kids there, like kind of a little gang of bullies, basically, you will encounter on your journey through the game. And Ash spends most of the time with their nose in a sketchbook, making paintings, making drawings, doodling on the walls, and kind of lost in this imaginary world of interesting creatures. But one day, Ash's sketchbook is snatched out of his hands by the bullies, and they tear all the pages out and throw them away. And Ash flees and gets in a cable car and goes up to the old creepy lighthouse at the top of the town. And there he finds a magic paintbrush. One of his drawings comes to life, and he realizes that the paintbrush that he has can draw things in a way that he never dreamed. It can cast beautiful, flickering, coloured imagery onto walls. It can bring to life the creatures that he's been imagining in his sketchbook for all of his life. And so, armed with this brush, Ash descends back down into the town to find the missing pages of his sketchbook and to clean up the town. Turns out that the brush can also sweep away some of the darkness, some of the pollution and the purple vines that clog up the town. And so he wants to light up the town with his paintbrush. And that leads me to the core mechanic of Concrete Genie, which is drawing on the walls. And this is super cool because you run around. It's a third-person sort of action-adventure-y setup. You can always see Ash as you guide him around the town. But if you look at a wall, you can dip into a menu of imagery, say vines or mountains or rain or like hanging strings of bulbs. And you can focus on the wall, and by tilting the controller and pulling the trigger, you can paint across the walls in a really instinctive, intuitive way. It's not like you're kind of pointing your controller at the screen and kind of sweeping left to right. You just hold it in a comfortable position, you tilt the controller left and right, and the motion controls inside of the DualShock controller paint across the screen. Very tactile, it's a small thing. It feels like it would have been very easy for it not to work, but it really does. If you've played the demo of Dreams, Dreams uses a similar mechanic to allow you to maneuver around inside of that game and to make games inside of that game. Concrete Genie does the same thing, so it does make you feel like you have a slightly more tactile relationship with what's happening inside the screen than if you were just using the controller. For people that don't want to do that, you can also use the right-hand stick, but honestly, it works really well. I recommend sticking with the original control scheme. And it's kind of immensely satisfying to be going around this dark, dilapidated town. Anytime you see a wall, a blank wall, you can light it up. The things that you can draw, they are in such bright colours and they move. So if you paint like a sea of grass across the side of a warehouse, the grass will have like little flecks of blue and pink neon colours in them. It's a natural palette, but it's also very heightened, so it's almost fluorescent, almost day glow. And so it ends up looking like neon lights. And so as you're painting these natural forms of aurora borealis and trees across this sea of empty buildings, you slowly start to light up the town bit by bit by bit. And every wall you paint on, if it's strung with fairy lights, it will light up the fairy lights. And you have to find all of the little patches of fairy lights around the first neighbourhood, paint the walls, light the bulbs, and then a new gate will open and you can move forward. And that's how you enter the game. It's really nice. It's really gentle. It feels really good to do it. It feels like you're expressing yourself into this world. And even though all of the imagery that you draw is kind of expertly drawn, it's very, very well done. It does feel like it's coming from your own hand. It does feel like you're casting your ideas onto the walls. And it really does take you into the game, take you into Ash's imagination and into this dark world. And there are some puzzles for you to solve as you're moving around this world too. For example, if you come to a gate that's frozen shut and there's a kind of a machine to make it open, or if you come to a fast-moving river and you need to cross it, you need a little bit of help to make these things open up for you. And the way that you do this is that after you've lit all the fairy lights, and by the way, fairy lights is a Britishism. I'm not sure what you call them in the US. I feel like it's one of those phrases that the US listeners will find really cute and British, but we call them fairy lights. The lights that you put around a Christmas tree anyway. Maybe string lights or something like that. But after you've lit all the lights, you are able to bring to life genies. Those are the creatures from Ash's imagination. And you collect pages of his sketchbook, and then you can bring the genies from the pages to life. And this means that you draw them on a wall. You can add features to them, like wings or ears or horns, arms and legs. And then you bring them to life, and they run around, and you can call them. So if you find an electrical switch, you can call the genies that you've brought to life, and they'll run through the walls to where you are. They're kind of 2D, they're frozen inside the walls, but they can move around the buildings, around corners, and find you. And they can zap that electricity switch back to life. Or if it's a wind one, a blue one, it can blow things. So it could blow an old crate into the water that you can then jump onto. And so you end up with a kind of a menagerie of cartoony genie illustrations that are kind of running around after you through the walls. And later on, as you're running around the town, just doing your thing, climbing up on the rooftops, sliding down wires, moving through the town, you'll see your genies. They're just hanging out. You might come down and find that one of them has found a fire that you've painted onto a wall and he's sitting by it like a campfire. Or if it's raining, because you've painted animated rain onto the side of a building, you might find one of your genies hiding under some leaves. You can interact with them in really fun ways too. Sometimes you'll find like a ball on the ground. You can interact with it and throw it into the hoop. Your genie will then high-five you from inside the wall. They're like little friends for Ash. Like his imaginary friends are coming to life. It's very cute. And it has a practical application too. Like your genies really, you can't get through the game without them. They are your friends. They're a puzzle mechanic. And so as you're painting the walls, you're bringing these genies to life, advancing through the game, through each neighbourhood. And you will also find those nasty bullies again who torn up the sketchbook at the start. You can't be caught by them. But what you can do is from a rooftop, you can stamp on the roof, draw them away from a spot where they're hanging out, like a street corner or a gate that you need to go through. You can draw them away and then jump back down and run through. So there's a little bit of a kind of a gentle stealth mechanic as well. But gentle is the key word for this game, really, because although it does contain elements of hiding, elements of darkness, and some puzzles, I moved through it pretty effortlessly. I didn't have to look up any solutions, which is quite rare for me, and was never tempted to, actually. Like, all of the solutions feel within arm's reach, if you just think about what's at your disposal. And the The puzzles are really cool, actually. There are some times when you need to use your electrical genie to start a machine that will lift up like a crane. And then Ash can then scale the rope of the crane and things like that. He's very mobile. And so I guess it's a very kind of a gentle sort of style of parkour in a way. You can jump up onto pipes and pull yourself up onto the roof of a building. There's a whole kind of world on top of the rooftops too, in that kind of Mary Poppins way. Like as you're looking for the pages of your sketchbook, you might see them blowing across rooftops. And you might be able to get on top of one building but not another. And so you have to kind of scan your eyes across the rooftops of the town and see if you can figure out a way to get as high as possible and then slide down onto a difficult-to-reach, obscure rooftop to get all of the pages that you're going to need. The more pages you get, the more things you can draw onto the walls, the more features you can add to your genies. It's cosmetic, but it's a big part of the fun of the game. I had fun making genies that were kind of, you know, they have horns and they have arms and legs and stuff, but I kind of just turned them all into giant butterflies by, you know, giving them ridiculous feather that's supposed to be a tail, but just giving them eight on each side. You can turn these genies into anything you want them to be. And they really do feel like pets or friends, and they kind of run around and interact with you. It's all very cute. And you might find Ash also has scribbled onto the walls. Before he had his magic brush, he was just doing little doodles here and there. And if you find your doodles, you can summon the genies over to them. And the genies will ask you to paint certain things on the walls. And it's like a little kind of collectibles puzzle sequence. You have to find all of your obscure little drawings and then follow some instructions from your genies on what to paint. And then you will have ticked that one off. So as you're moving through the world, there's plenty to look out for. You have the main puzzles that are in the way of progression. You have the bullies, which you have to avoid. You have the dark vines that you have to get rid of with the fairy lights. And you also have these little drawings to look out for. You have the pages to collect. It's quite a lot to keep you busy as you're moving around this world. There are 6 or maybe 7 chapters to the game. Each one takes about an hour at the most. Depends on how much you want to do. You could probably move through the whole game in 5 hours if you wanted to. I think I was somewhere between 6 and 7. I think I have 85% trophies or something like that. So you can be a completionist about the game, a completionist. And the painting mechanic is so fun and the traversal is so pleasurable. Honestly, it's the kind of game that it's good to take slow, I think. Just really take your time, really just stop and paint whole city blocks. And as you kind of move through the game, you'll move higher into the industrial remnants of factories and a power plant. And you can scan your eyes back across the town that you've come from and see all of the work that you've done lighting the place up. There are also some billboards lying around for things, attractions that used to be in the town, like an aquarium or, you know, like fishing trips and things like this. And the billboards are all very old-fashioned and they're kind of animated, but they're all broken down and fallen and rusty. And if you found enough imagery that means you can match the patterns on the billboard, it'll come back to life and tell you some of the story of this town, some of the attractions of this town that used to be there or might have been. And there are also newspapers that you can find that will fill you in on some of the town's history, why it's abandoned, why it's so polluted. So there's like a little environmentalist strand to this game too. It's something that I'm always in favour of. I like it when a game has a positive message coming through it. And so this game, I guess, is about environmentalism, community. It's also about how people interact with each other. It's about imagination. And the bullies have a part to play too. It's about a little bit about bullying and self-expression. So there are lots of nice messages resonating through the game that all add up along with the gameplay. The wonderful design, the environment, the characters, the writing. Great animation that has almost a kind of a paper cut look to it sometimes. And it all adds up to this really special sense of warmth. I really felt my heart was warm as I played through this game, and I had a constant sense of enjoyment. There's something about the palette, about the neon colours, something about the colour therapy, and just the thrill of being able to cast imagery onto walls on such a grand scale. You can make this town into a kind of a lighting installation, and it's wondrous in a way. If it fills you with a sense of wonder, I was smiling a lot as I played through this game. The game does have a second act to it as well. It does develop as you progress. The gameplay develops as you progress almost constantly. There are always new mechanics, new types of genies, new types of puzzles, new kind of heights that you have to climb to and depths you have to climb down to. And the kind of unrolling history of the town and the narrative story develops. New gameplay mechanics are introduced. The second half of the game is actually quite different to the first, but I won't spoil it here. I just think it's good to let you know that it's not going to be a game that settles into a rut. It really does feel like kind of a magical adventure that just keeps developing as you move through it to the end. It's a rare game that I almost wish was a little longer. They do introduce some cool mechanics towards the end that you don't have to use very much. Maybe it would have been nice to actually have a longer stretch up to that finale. But after you've completed the game, there is a free painting mode, so you can visit the different sectors of the game, like the old fishing town, the factory, the waterworks, and all this kind of stuff. And you can just paint to your heart's content. There is also post-game content too. There are some things that you can't do until you have all of the imagery that you can paint. You kind of need to use the imagery as like key codes in a way to kind of activate genies to do certain things. So after the game's complete, there are still reasons to run around. There are still interesting ways to interact with your genies that you might not have noticed the first time. It's a game that I might well try and get a platinum trophy for. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know that I've said this before and I've often failed. I said I was going to get the platinum for No Man's Sky and for Horizon Zero Dawn, and I chickened out on the most difficult ones where you just have to do this boring stuff. But all of the ones in Concrete Genie seem quite attainable. And so I think just as an excuse to spend more time in this game world, I think I might well go back into the game and seek out all of those last little scribbles and all of the obscure pages that are blowing around the town and just tie up all of those loose ends. As I said at the start, this game is currently available for people that have PlayStation Plus as a free download, or at least as part of your membership fee. If you have a PlayStation and you have thought about getting PlayStation Plus, this is a really good month to do it, actually, because the two games of the month for PlayStation 4 owners are Concrete Genie and Control Ultimate Edition. And I have done an episode on Control and another episode about some of the DLC of that game. I'm a huge fan of that game. It's really spectacular. And I mean, if you were going to buy Control and Concrete Genie, I think they'd run you like £20 each or something as downloads. And so that almost pays for like a year of PlayStation Plus. It's a good service. I mean, it's a random selection of games that you get. You just get one or two a month to download. But I have actually found it to be pretty good value, and as Concrete Genie illustrates, it's a game that I'd never heard of, and probably would not have found unless it had been on PlayStation Plus, so it does actually expose you to games that maybe you wouldn't choose, because I always download the games that are available and at least give them 5 or 10 minutes to see if I'm going to bin it or if it's something that I might be interested in. Concrete Genie turned out to be just an A-plus game. Absolutely adored this one. So that's it. That's one way to play it. If you're interested in PlayStation Plus, now's a good time for that. The game does also have a PSVR mode, which I was fully intending to try before I recorded the episode, which I wanted to do tonight to get out in time for Monday morning. But I realised that my Move controllers are completely out of battery, So I've got them on charging now. I will give Concrete Genie's VR mode a little spin and mention it if it's noteworthy. When I first got the game, I was quite excited to have something to play in PSVR when I saw that logo on the game. But it turns out that the VR is kind of an additional mode. It's not really a part of the main game. It's something that they've tacked on. So I'm assuming it's going to be a free painting mode where you use the Move controllers and you can paint around you. But I will definitely give that a try. So that's another reason to check it out if you're a PSVR owner looking for something to play. But all in all, Concrete Genie is a game that has a sense of wonder and a warm heart. It's lovingly made. I really admire the craft of it. They've seen things coming that could have been problems. For example, not being able to see places that you could climb, not being able to see objects that you could interact with. All of the objects you can interact with have a little glittery sheen to them. If the illustrations might have been too hard to find on the walls, the small ones, they have like little clouds of white butterflies flying around them. And the same with the pages. If the pages might have been too hard to find, they actually do little routes around the rooftops and leave white trails behind them. Also, if you may have lost your genies and needed them, not knowing where they were, you can call them and there'll be little icons on the side of the screen telling you that they're coming. There are some points where you need to track things as well. And there's a mode where you can hold your paintbrush in the air and like a little trail of paint will blow in the direction that you're supposed to go. The map has really good modes so that you can filter out the noise and find things that you need to find. And all in all, like any pitfalls that could have come along and really spoiled the game, it's like they saw them all coming. They caught them in advance. It feels like a game that was lovingly put together, well play tested, and it feels like the developers have really put themselves into it to make it as good as it can be. I feel like it's a really well-made game. I noticed that it was nominated for a few awards. It was nominated for a Game Award and for a BAFTA, but it was muscled out by other titles. I think this game should be more well-known than it is. It's a wonderful game. That's Concrete Genie. So I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing about Concrete Genie. If you've played it yourself, or if you're planning to, I'd love to hear your thoughts about the game. You can find me on social media as Gaming in the Wild. I'm most active on Twitter, but I'm also on Twitch, on Instagram, on YouTube, on Facebook. You can find me on any of those platforms by searching Gaming in the Wild. And also on patreon.com/gamingintheWild if you'd like to support the show. So thank you very much for listening. I'll be back next week with a new episode. There are a few games that I'm thinking about talking about next week. Maybe I'll even be able to rope in a guest to come and talk about games with me. So I hope to hear from you on social media and stuff. Thanks very much for listening. This has been Gaming in the Wild. Take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye for now.